Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, undiagnosed. You feeling tired, life inspired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.
Welcome to another edition of the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast, episode 41. I'm proud and honored to have Northwest Icon, as I would call it. Man, this guy has done a lot in the Northwest. Steve Miggs, how you doing, brother?
I'm great. Thanks for the intro, and now your song is stuck in my head. That intro is fantastic.
Man, yeah, that's from the Never Were, Joe Love. Man, he's really impressive. He's got a lot of songs. Yeah.
All right, man.
How you doing?
All day now.
All
I'm
right,
great, man.
You.
I'm great. How are you?
I'm really doing good, man. Thank you. I've been blessed. Appreciate your time. I know you're a busy man. You got a hockey tournament today, right?
Yeah, apparently that. I'm their backup because I haven't played in forever, so I play goalie. But they told me that if the team's not doing too well, then they'll put me back in because I haven't played in like a year. So They're trying to win this thing. And I'm like, you don't want me as your goalie if you're trying to win. I haven't played in a while. But apparently they're not doing well right now. They're down 4-1. So there's a chance I'll be playing in the next game.
Okay. All right. Now it's time for your first-timer question. What got you into the crazy world of professional wrestling?
You know, I had a couple of buddies that that lived on my – I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and – there were these two twins that were a little bit older than me, but they were like, they were just the cool guys on the block. And like, I kind of like looked up to them. They were the dudes that like were always like kind of bringing me under their wing, and they were obsessed wrestling fans. And so they first introduced me, and this is like growing up in the 80s. So like, you know, introduced me to wrestlers like Roddy Piper and of course like Hulk Hogan and Macho Man Randy Savage. But it wasn't until I got my hands on a magazine and saw guys like the Road Warriors and Bruiser Brody. And I remember, I'll never forget the picture. It was like a picture of him going through the stands with a chain in his hand. His face is bloody. And I'm like, I've never been more scared as a kid looking at a picture. And this wasn't even a person in front of me. And I was terrified, but I loved it. And it was just something so cool about that. And that's just where my wrestling passion started. Like, I just was a fan of the larger-than-life characters. And as you know, in the 80s, like, the characters were – almost at times cartoonish, but not always. Like, some of them were just like, you know, these dudes that just look like gods. And from there on out, I just kind of continue to be a fan. And I've loved, you know, every generation that since then I've been a fan of, and including today's product. I just, I'm a fan of the sport, and I don't think I'll ever not be, much to my wife's chagrin, because like, she can't handle all the wrestling I watch.
Okay. Right on. And, hey, I want to say, man, I've seen a couple of your matches that stand out to me, your match versus Gregory Irons and then Phantasma. My goodness, you've come a long way, man. Congratulations.
Oh, that means a lot coming from you. Thank you. The Gregory Irons one was, I think, that was, like, for me, the first moment where I felt like, okay, I'm starting to get this. I mean, it takes years, as you know. Like, I still don't feel like I've gotten it fully, but, like, I'm trying. And that was the first time where like, I got to work with a guy who was like, on a national level. And had a great experience with him, and he was so complimentary, and I learned so much from him. And then the El Fantasmo match, man, I mean, that guy, he's just, I learned so much just being in a ring with that guy. He's on another level, of course. I mean, obviously what he's doing with New Japan and with the Bullet Club, but he's just so damn good and such a great character, and really did everything. I mean, you know, he's one of those guys, I think he can make anyone look good, and he proved it with me. He's an awesome dude, and thank you, man. I appreciate you watching those matches. Those are two of my favorites.
Okay, nice. And another thing that impressed me, my goodness, you've been on the radio in the Northwest since 1997, and you've done a lot of stuff for the community and for the different areas that in the Northwest, you know. And one thing I can tell you, about 5 years ago, I was working at a place called, I think it's called Blue, downtown Tacoma, and what the heck did I see? On the wall, the whole huge wall was a picture of you and your wife. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, my gosh. Because my wife worked at True Blue, and they did like some kind of a charity thing where we spent the afternoon helping, like, you know, make food. And I think it was for Northwest Harvest, if I remember correctly. And we spent the entire day just, like, helping for people who, you know, or have been dealt a hard hand in life and needed, like, you know, meals and stuff like that. So we were helping prepare them, and they brought a photographer there. And I'm just there to, you know, A, because I love helping out in any way I can, and I'm also there to support my wife, who her company was doing a great fundraiser and a great charity thing. And I didn't realize they were taking all these pictures, and they want to take some photos. But I was like, oh, I don't need to be in them because this is, you know, this is for your work. But then they took still a few, and not that I cared, but, like, then all of a sudden I'm getting, like, blown up on my messages from people who kept, like, seeing that picture of us doing this thing because it's a giant picture. I'm like, that cracked me up. I thought that was one of the funniest things, and that's too funny that you saw that.
Yes, and then do you have an idea how big that is? Because when you just say it's a picture on a wall, people might think it's like a 10-foot by 10-foot wall. This sucker was, what is it? It's like 100 feet by 50, something like that. It's huge.
Dude, I never saw it in person. I saw people take pictures, and from everything I was told, the picture still didn't do it justice. I can't believe, that's hilarious. I wish I could have seen that and taking a picture next to it just to show how big that thing was.
Yes. Goodness, yes. Okay. Now, my next question, you already mentioned a few wrestlers. So who were some of your heroes growing up, whether it was wrestling, music, sports, ordinary life, or all the above?
For wrestling, massive Roddy Piper fan. That him, Dusty Rhodes, like when it comes to, like, who's the ultimate good guy that I love, it would be Dusty. Who's the ultimate bad guy that I love, it would be Roddy Piper. There's plenty of others. I mean, I'm sure, like, I'm like you, like, I'd probably go on for hours, and my answer would probably change tomorrow if you asked me the same question. But those are the first two that, like, pop into mind. Of course, like, I'm just an 80s kid, so I love a lot of the 80s era wrestling. Currently, I mean, I'm still a massive fan of a guy like Edge. I know he's kind of towards the end of his career, but I think his latest run has been nothing short of fantastic. You know, I love what MJF is doing in AEW. I love Swerve Strickland. I'm just a fan of FTR. Probably Dax might be one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. Just, I love not only his mindset when he does his podcast, but also his style in the ring. I'm a fan of, like, we know what wrestling is, but, like, it's still, like, make things make sense. And I feel like he's the guy that always makes whatever he's doing in that ring make sense. And I really enjoy that logic to a very illogical world that we're in. And music, oh, man, Dave Grohl, I'm a massive fan of Nirvana. And Dave Grohl, as far as a drummer, probably him and Tommy Lee from Motley Crue, probably the biggest influences to me, because I play drums, and they were probably the biggest influences to my drumming style. I love the White Stripes as well, but, like, so Jack White's one of my all-time favorite guitarists and songwriters. Sports, you know, being a goalie in hockey, Martin Brodeur, from the New Jersey Devils. I'm obviously a big fan. I'm loving the Seattle Kraken. Yanni Gourde right now is a favorite of mine. But I think ultimate hero in sports, probably there were guys like Ken Danico and Scott Stevens. They were defensemen for the Devils, and they were like those no-nonsense, you know what, you got to be prepared to get into their zone because the two of them are going to crush you when you get in there. They weren't anything, especially Danico. He wasn't a flashy goal scorer, but he would – You would regret going into the offense, into the defensive zone for the Devils, because he's going to pummel you. And I love that style of hockey, and I love that style of a player.
Yeah, okay. What about Ordinary Life?
Ordinary Life. My brother, just because, you know, not getting, like, super deep, but, like, him and I weren't necessarily the closest when we were younger. Like, we grew up in the same house, but I'm a very laid-back, kind of chill person. I take after my mom. He takes a little bit more after my dad, very temperamental, and sometimes, you know, growing up, like, you know, we were a three-year difference, and he was the older one. So we didn't always, like, get along, mostly because of his temper, and, like, then things got physical a lot, and it was a rough go growing up. But then he joined the Navy he was just not going down a good road, like, just with life choices and just anything, and things weren't working out. So it was kind of like I don't know what else to do with my life. I'm joining the Navy. And he joined the Navy, and I've never seen a bigger turnaround. Like, I truly think if, like, there were video cameras following us as kids into our teen years, into almost our young adult years, and then show what the transformation was, it would be the ultimate commercial for the Navy, because they turned his life around. He became a very responsible, loving, respectful human being that was a true leader. I mean, he's done stuff in Iraq, Afghanistan, just winning medals, and he went from being the person that, like, I needed to get away from, and that's part of why I left home going into college, to becoming my biggest hero and my biggest, like, person I look up to, because I respect that. I mean, I think who doesn't love, you know, a story of a person who could turn around their life for the positive? And I mean, that he's the ultimate hero to me. And if you would have asked me in my teen years, I would have thought you're crazy I was going to say that. But I say that with complete and utter confidence that there's no bigger hero in my life than my brother.
Awesome, man. And there's a list of people that the military saved their lives, you know, by putting them in a better direction and teaching them stuff about life, you know. And really awesome story there. Okay, and then back to music. You're currently the drummer of Bruiser Brody, the band. Man, they're an impressive band, and they're coming a long way in the Northwest. Tell us a little bit about that, and also your Migs Fest you've done.
Oh, the Migs Fest was such a funny thing. Like, we just did it it'd just be funny to call something Migs Fest. It was just like a giant birthday party. We always put them on around October, and it was just a chance for me to put on a show where my friends' bands could play, and then eventually I created the band Bruiser Brody, and then we, of course, wanted to play, and then we were like, there's a band called The Last International that are not from Seattle, but they're from New York, but they're like one of my all-time favorite bands, and I've known them for years, and they came out and played it once, and that was really flattering, and it was just a party for the local music scene, and we called it Migs Fest, but it was always just an insane experience, and we'd always have a lot of fun. Bruiser Brody started just as I used to do a podcast called The Migs Cast, and my co-host was Glenn Cannon, great guitarist. He's in a band called Glenn Cannon and The Damage Done. They're phenomenal. You can check them out. But we just said it would be fun to create a band and share the story on the podcast of, like, writing the songs, going and recording. It was never really meant to be a band. It was meant to be like a project and almost like a fun storyline on a podcast. And then I basically picked my favorite musicians in town that I've guys that I've always wanted to play with, or guys that we always talked about wanting to play together. Jeff Rouse, who's an amazing guitarist. He's played with some great bands over the years, including, let's talk a little bit of wrestling. He was he played bass for Fozzy for a little bit when their bassist was sick and battling, I think, cancer. He's just another level of a bassist, and I've always wanted to work with him. So he joined in. Our friend JT Phillips joined in. And at the last moment, Glenn was going to sing and play guitar, but he's just like, hey, Travis Brock, who used to be in Second Coming, which was a great local band, and also Postmodern Heroes, he's like, you want me to see if he'd want to help us out with this project? And I start laughing. I'm like, yeah, sure. There's no way that guy's going to want to help us. He's on another level vocally, and I didn't know him all that well. And then he jumped at the chance. He thought it was a fun idea. And we honestly wrote, most of the songs were written by Glenn beforehand. Like, there were songs they weren't working for his actual bands, but they were good songs. He's like, what do you think of these? And we just freshened them up. And we went in the studio after like a couple of practices. Like, it was we jokingly called it like a kamikaze project, where we just kind of got together, practiced a couple times, and just recorded. And that's the album that we put out. We didn't overthink it. We just kind of let the music kind of happen. I compare a lot of wrestling and music together. And I think you agree, like, some of the best moments in the ring and best moments in music are the moments you don't expect and you didn't plan. They were just kind of an impromptu thing that just happened, and it felt great, either the crowd for music or wrestling reacted really well, or if you're in a practice space, like, oh, that was really cool. Let's just keep it. Like, that wasn't the plan, but it's awesome. And that album really does, like, it's a great time capsule for me of five friends getting together, making some music, and not overthinking it. And in a weird way, we put out, I think, a very cool record that I know all of us are very proud of.
Very cool, like you said. And then back, staying on the music subject, my goodness, KISW, I've listened to them since I was a teenager. And,
awesome.
Man, the pain in the grass, you know, it's like I've seen a few of those.
Yeah.
And look what they've grown to. Now it's a two-day event, right?
Oh, it's insane. It went from, obviously a show that was in Seattle at the Mural Amphitheater, focusing on, like, lots of really cool local bands, to then becoming this monstrosity that it is now at White River Amphitheater. It's usually 2 days, sometimes 1 day, but sometimes even 3 days. It just depends on what bands are available. I mean, I think last year we did a three-day festival, and I'm not sure what the plan is this year. I know we are doing Pain in the Grass, and it's going to happen towards the end of summer. I don't know if it's a two-day or a one-day festival. But, you know, it's going to be a blast. And honestly, to me, that's my favorite show of the year, because for 1 day, I get to, like, really, you know, like, we do stuff backstage, like interviews and stuff. But my favorite part is when we don't have any responsibilities, and myself and a few others, we just leave the backstage, because backstage sometimes gets boring. Not boring, but it's uncomfortable because the bands are working and they're busy and we're in the way. And we just go out, walk the lawn, walk the grounds, and just meet all the rockaholics and the listeners that, you know, for that day, man, you feel like the ultimate, like, superstar, because everyone's so happy to meet you. They're super fans of the station. And it's like one of the most, it's overwhelmingly awesome, like, because everybody is just so cool. And I love that. That's my favorite part, is meeting listeners, because, you know, at the end of the day, that's how I get to pay my bills. And I'm very fortunate. And I have a nice life with my wife and my three-year-old that is all because of people who listen to KSW. And when you get to meet them, and the ice is already broken, like, they're excited to meet you. They know who you are. I'm kind of a introvert, and I have, like, a little bit of social anxiety at times. So I'm not necessarily like somebody that could just go up to somebody and just strike up a conversation. But with our festivals and KSW, when a listener comes up, like, that awkwardness is already gone. Like, they already know a little bit about me, and I'm excited to learn a little bit about them. And, man, I can go on and on about the relationship with our radio station and our listeners, but the true testament is KSW's been around for over 50 years. That's not very often that a radio station can say that, especially a rock radio station. And the reason being, and I'm positive of this, is that there is an incredible relationship between the radio station, the personalities, and the listeners. Like, there's just there's something different than any other radio station I've ever worked at, where it's just a true love fest. And, you know, when we do things, people come out and show support. And I think that's a really freaking cool thing.
Yes, that's awesome. You know, and then you got the BJ and Migs show. Now you've been rivaled with the Danny Bonaduce show at the same time. And then, man, you guys have been number one for most years, I would imagine. Tell us a little bit about the BJ and Migs show.
Oh, man, it's a blast. And it's fun that you mentioned Danny. I do want to say I'm hoping, and I it sounds like he's doing better health-wise. And, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, we're competition, but when I heard about his health issues, like, that broke my heart to hear that, because from the few things I've heard about people who've met him, he sounds like an incredible dude. And I know Sarah, his co-host, and she's, like, one of my favorite people in the radio industry. And so I'm happy to see that he's back on the air, and from what it sounds like, things are better. So I just want to throw that out there. But the BJ and Migs show, man, it's crazy, dude. We're coming up on, I think, about 17 years together, and it feels like we just started last year. Like, we have a blast. We have a great team, truly a great team. I mean, in addition to BJ, we have Vicky Barcelona, and we have his kids. BJ's kids are on our show, and that sounds like nepotism at its finest, but I truly mean this, man. Like, and I told him this. I was like, look, you want to have your kids on the show, I'm treating them no different than anyone else. Like, they don't – I mean, not that we're harsh on anybody, but they're not going to be handled with kid gloves because they're BJ's kids. They got to be treated like everybody else. And he was cool with that, and they're cool with that, and they are phenomenal. They're just incredible people, and they bring a lot on the air and also behind the scenes. They're invaluable. And then Danny V is another member of our show, and he's like kind of become like my little not little, my right-hand man, my work wife, as we always joke about. Like, I just love the dude, and we always have a blast, like, because she's a mutual hockey fan, loves music. And the relationship with BJ and I is, man, I get paid to make fun of my friends for 4 hours in the day, and they get paid to make fun of me. Like, we get to do what I would do on, like, a weekend and just sit in an apartment or a house and just cut it up and crack jokes at each other, and nobody takes it personal, and everybody's intentions are never mean-spirited, and the listeners have picked up on that. Like, we aren't a negative show. Like, we're not caustic. We don't really want to, like, if we're arguing, it's like one of those dumb arguments you have with your friends where really at the end of the day you're just kind of laughing while you're arguing.
Yes, definitely. Okay, and then let me see. Back to the interview. Did you play sports in high school and growing up?
I played hockey. So I've been playing hockey since probably like around 12 years old. And, you know, obviously I didn't play in college, but then picked it back up when I moved out here. And just really just having a kid has caused me not to be able to play as much as I would like. Just, you know, because most of the rec leagues and the beer leagues in town, the games start at like 9, 10 o'clock at night. And when you get up at 3 in the morning, you know, I used to be able to pull that off because I'd get home from work and then I'd just take a nap all afternoon. But now with a 3-year-old, she doesn't care if I'm tired or not. She wants to play. And I'm not going to be like, no, I'm not going to play with you because dad needs a nap. So, you know, I try and find time to do that still. But that's my sport. Like, I mean, I played Little League baseball and basketball and, like, you know, never really good at any of those. But hockey was the sport that I wouldn't say great, or I was above average. You know, I was able to hold my own and not embarrass myself like I might have done in baseball or basketball.
Okay, and then what's your self-defense background?
You know, I mean, like anyone, I grew up like doing like taekwondo and a little bit of wrestling. Mainly my self-defense background is having to protect myself from my brother when I was a kid. Like, I had learned how to not back down from that. I learned how to take a beating. It's not terrible, you know, but you know what I mean. Take a beating and not give up.
Definitely.
Like, I would say that that's my background is just I'm resilient. Like, I have a high pain threshold because of that, and I'm not afraid to you know, nowadays, dude, the older I am, if I never get into another fight, I will be happy. Like, I'm not like someone that likes to, like, even though I love wrestling,
definitely.
I love physicality, but I love that we do this in a way that, like, nobody in a perfect world gets hurt. Like, I love physicality. I love playing hockey because of that reason. I love wrestling because of that reason. But, man, I got a kid and a life that I don't want to have to, I don't want to risk any of that because of, you know, being an idiot. And not that I ever was, but, like, you know, in high school, of course, you got into lots of fights. In college, it kind of tapered off, and I don't remember the last time I got into like a legit half where I needed to defend myself. But the nice thing is, I'm a 6'3", 220-pound dude that's covered in tattoos, and I don't believe it. But my wife's like, you're very intimidating looking if you don't know you. Like, I'm the nicest, nonviolent, peaceful person. But there's been instances where, like, I remember one time, and it was the dumbest thing. We were at a Starbucks. I didn't know I cut in front of someone. They freaked out. They're laying their horn on me, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, I don't get this guy. He gets out of his car, and he's walking towards my car. And I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. So I get out of my car just to kind of be like, hey, dude, like, I didn't know. I wasn't looking to have a fight, but I got out. And it was, dude, I saw the look on his face went from, I'm mad. He was a smaller guy to, oh, I picked the wrong guy to get into it with. And he was just like, hey, man. And he was just like, hey, man, I just, you know, you cut in front of me. And you could tell, like, he backed down. He went from being, like, fist clenched to, like, you know, like, the hands are out, like, hey, we're cool. And my wife laughed at me because, like, I ended up, like, paying it forward and buying his coffee. Like, I was like, whatever that guy just ordered, I'll pay for it. Like, because I'm not here to have fights with people, man. I'm a grown man. Like, that to me, like, anytime anyone wants to, like, do that, that seems silly. But long story to your answer, like, I don't have, like, any serious, like, jujitsu or any of that kind of self-defense stuff. I'm just a guy that I'm not going to back down. And but I'm also probably going to get my ass kicked, but I'll keep on fighting if I have to.
Yeah, right on. Yeah, and then growing up probably wasn't that easy either, you know. But anyway,
sorry.
Go ahead. I interrupted you.
I was just going to say, like, yeah, I always cringe when people are like, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and I'm, because yes, where I grew up was very rough, and there were some, I've been jumped, I've had knives pulled on me, I've had people try and mug me with a gun, like, I've had all those things happen, but I never want to be that guy, because I have friends that are like that, like, you don't want to mess with me, I'm from Brooklyn, New York. I'm like, man, like, there is also some very weak people in Brooklyn. It's not like everybody in Brooklyn is tough and strong, but growing up in Brooklyn, yeah, you kind of have to have street smarts, and you have to have your head on a swivel a lot. Like, my wife laughs at me whenever we walk around the streets of Seattle. Like, she's just like, you look like you're just ready to pounce. I'm like, you just don't know what's going to happen. That's how I grew up. Like, that was just, you don't know who's going to come up from behind you wanting to take your wallet or wanting to do whatever. I always, like, don't ever want to be the guy that's like, I'm from Brooklyn, that makes me tough. But Brooklyn does make you tough. Like, you have no choice but to be tough when you grow up in, like, a city that, you know, sometimes there's a lot of crime.
For sure. Okay, and then let me see. What other different characters have you worked besides just yourself?
Other characters? In wrestling or?
Wrestling, yes.
So, like, what I've become with, like, so, you know, I started wrestling late. I started training, I think I was 40, so I never planned on becoming a wrestler. It was just, I was involved with wrestlers and doing wrestling stuff with, like, ring announcing, and I got along with everybody, and they were like, you should come down to a training session just to see how it feels. So I did, and fell in love with it, never thought I was going to have a match. So then when I had a match, because I just, like, I picked it up decently, and you know, I'm fully aware, like, because of what I do for a living, that will be an attraction. Like, oh, okay, like, here's the radio guy. He's wrestling. Let's go see what that's all about. So when at first my character was radio personality, getting to wrestle, it's kind of, you know, it's an attraction. Like, you know, how the wrestling's been doing that forever. When you bring in, like, a public person and you put them in the ring, from the Mr. T's to the Logan Pauls these days to so on and so forth. That was really fun. So my character was just the radio guy. And then I started, like, during training, people started realizing that I was thriving and being a better performer when I was being the antagonist, the quote-unquote heel, the bad guy. And I really felt fit into that. And then the joke was, in training, everyone was calling me Hollywood Steve Miggs. Like, it was like a Hollywood Hogan thing where, you know, I was just like, all of a sudden the good guy became the jerk. So my character morphed into this guy that would brag about being a celebrity, because that's my biggest pet peeve with radio, is the radio people who feel that they are celebrities, that don't you know who I am? I should be treated differently. I'm on the radio bragging about being verified on Twitter. All these things that I hated about radio personalities, I channeled into the character that I became, which was, you know, at the time I was calling myself local celebrity Steve Miggs, which everybody hates that term, and it instantly would get people mad at me. Which was perfect. And then it started morphing into, I was starting to wrestle outside of Washington, which was, that to me was the moment where I realized, okay, I'm, you know, because you have, sometimes you get self-insecure and you're like, am I actually doing this okay? Am I not? Or am I just the drizzling poops in the ring? Like, what's going on? And then I started getting booked, like, in Portland and, like, in Richland and, like, Vancouver, like, just different areas around Spokane, but places that they don't know I do radio for a living. I'm just being brought in because they're like, oh, we like your character. We think it would work out well with our show. And then the crowd would get into, like, booing me. Cause, like, the best part is you go into Portland bragging about being a star in Seattle. Well, they hate Seattle, and they especially hate a guy who thinks he's famous in Seattle. So, like, it worked out actually better outside of the reach of the radio. And so then I was like, well, I can't just be called local celebrity. And then it's morphed into being verified Steve Miggs to kind of, like, brag about the stupid blue check mark that I had. Like, I don't care about those things, like, to be honest with you, but I love that it was pushing people's buttons. And in a way, the character just became this giant inside joke to myself, making fun of the radio people that I know that are just insufferable D-bags. And to me, I got a kick out of that. And then the crowd got a kick out of it and were feeding into it. But in a weird way, like, it's starting to morph out of that. Like, it's just kind of become like this, a little bit of, like, how I talked about how, like, maybe my form of self-defense isn't necessarily like a seasoned style. It's more of like, I'll take a beating and keep getting up. I've kind of become this bad guy that will keep getting beat down. I'm not really like a chicken poop heel, but I'm like, keep beating me, but eventually I'm going to find that window to get you. And it's going to be underhanded, like no different than like in a fight. Like if I have a chance to punch in the nuts, I'm gonna, or I'm going to, if I poke you in the eye, I'm gonna. And that's kind of like what the characters become. So it's like part chicken poop, but it's more of like this opportunistic douchebag celebrity that, you know, like in the perfect world of wrestling, like, you know, the good guy is a better wrestler, but the bad guy will find a way to cheat to get the upper hand. And that's kind of become the style. And I really enjoy that. Like that, I never wanted to be like just straight up like the chicken crap heel. And also I never wanted to be like this, like, you know, large in life, unrealistic, like I'm the big guy thing. So in a weird way, like the character is a lot of me with that. But then like the over the top bragging with the verified title, which is like my version of like the $1 million belt. Like, you know, I brag, I have this giant check mark on a belt and I use it as a weapon and all that kind of stuff. Like there's obviously a lot of, my wrestler is a giant nod to the 80s, even a little bit of the 70s. Like, you know, I borrow a lot from like Jake the Snake, from Roddy Piper to, Buddy Landell. I love him. So like, these are the guys that like, those are the style of bad guys that I truly love. And my biggest, like, I it's like flattering things is when people will say, oh, you remind me of Roddy Piper. And I don't think I do, but it's cool that somebody might notice something, a mannerism that maybe I'm not even intentionally doing, but it was just from years of growing up watching a guy like that. So that's kind of what the characters become. There's a little bit of who the radio guy, Steve Miggs, in there, but it's, like, you know, they always say the best characters are you turned up to 11. I'm not a jerk. I like to think I'm not. And I think most days, and maybe someone might've caught me on a bad day where I wasn't the nicest, but I like to try and think that I've been nothing but polite and respectful to everybody who's been nice and respectful to me. So that part I'm not necessarily, but you know, the radio character to another level. I think there's a little bit of that for sure in my character and what I do in the ring.
Sweet. Okay. And then tell the fans some of the most memorable matches you've seen and been involved with, because we sure would like to look up some matches that we're not familiar with.
You know, memorable matches. I saw, it was a couple years ago, and sadly, Jay Briscoe is no longer with us, but I was at WrestleMania in Dallas, and I went to the Ring of Honor show where it was the Briscoes versus FTR. And this is the first one that popped in mind when you said that. It was the first meeting of them for a Ring of Honor show. And it was one of the most amazing experiences, from the crowd to just the overall energy, the atmosphere, and the match itself was just like hard hitting. Everything made sense. It was like a believable fight while also still being a wrestling match. Like, you know, there's obviously, we suspend reality with wrestling because it's a chance for us to escape from whatever crap we're dealing with. And those guys just did it on a level that, man, I could go back and watch that match and I'd probably had the same excitement that I had when I was there in the venue. That was probably one of the more memorable matches that I've ever been. And, you know, another one that popped into mind, and it was a local match, and I think it's on YouTube. So there's a wrestler around town called Classic Cody Chun. He's a guy who I get to train with still to this day, and one of my favorite guys and also a great wrestler. He had a match against Christopher Daniels a few years ago at Defy, and I was ring announcing. And I don't know what it was about that match. I think it was just sometimes the best matches – to me, and I don't know if you agree, like, it's the story that led up to why they're having the match. And for that match, like, Cody was relatively newer, you know, in the eyes of like mainstream wrestling fans or local wrestling fans. Like, he was obviously doing it for years, but like, he's starting to build some steam and get some traction and get a name for himself locally. But he was wrestling a guy like Christopher Daniels, who's a legend. And I felt like it was one of those matches where it's like, you either got to poop or get off the pot. Like, it's a chance to really prove that you're able to hang with a guy of that stature and that level. And that match, I don't even know how I can like explain it, because there's nothing in the match that like I could put a finger on that. Like, that's the moment. It was just the entire emotion. Like, I, as cheesy as it sounds, I got like teary eyed because I'm watching someone that I know go head to head with one of the best and hold his own. And it was just something so, I'm so freaking magical about that. I got goosebumps even just like talking about it right now. Like I go back and watch that match from time to time, and I'm sure like that might not even be Cody's favorite match, or Christopher Daniels might not even remember it. Like, but for me, watching that, yeah. There was something really special about it. You know, like there's sometimes, and a lot of it maybe had to do with I'm getting to see my friend step up and improve himself, but also like the crowd was behind him. It was a fun one, and I don't even think it's super long, maybe 15 minutes, 20 minutes long total. But if someone could find that one on YouTube, I highly recommend it, because that to me was like it was a special match.
Definitely. And yes, me and Matt Farmer go a long way. We've been up and down the road. We've had a feud myself against the Suicide Kings. We were a top three match in 2003, myself and Awesome Adam versus Nikki Sixx and Matt Farmer at Bellevue Community College was rated the top three match in Washington that year. So, but anyway,
amazing.
That wasn't the point. The point was Defy, the crowd there. That is probably the best wrestling crowd I've ever seen, as in just the atmosphere. They're into the matches. They're wrestling fans, you know. It's amazing, that crowd. So, yes, I'm sure that had something to do with that match, like you said. And what about matches you've been in?
Matches that I've been in.
Yeah, anyway.
The El Fantasma one, speaking of the Defy crowd, that one was special just because it was never intended to be any, like, you know, El Fantasma is just a great jerk in the ring. And so from day one that he wrestled at Defy, when I was ring announcing, he would always like kick me in the junk or push me out of the ring. It was like constantly messing with me. And every once in a while I would get my comeuppance on him and hit him with a move. Like, but it was never like, there was never an intention to have a match with him. And then all of a sudden, like, he was doing stuff in Japan. And apparently, like, he just was like, he hit up Matt and he's like, hey, I would like to do a match with Miggs. And I think it's because we were on the same show in a show in Portland. So I think he realized, okay, Miggs can wrestle. And there's a story already there. So, like, that match was, like, really, really cool because, like, it was never meant to be one, but it turned out to be a match that had backstory for 2 years. So, like, there's all this great content for the promo packages and for the story arc. And so, like, then I come out and I'm not being the antagonist jerk Steve Miggs. Like, I'm ring announcer Steve Miggs, host of Defy, who's finally had enough with El Fantasmo. And to be able to step into the ring and go face to face with him and have a match was like the crowd was behind me. They just wanted to see it. And the match was super fun. And it was like, it was a very old school style match. Like, we put on like an 80s match. I hulked up it was like one of those kind of matches. Like, and that was intentional because, you know, you're performing in front of a sea of great independent wrestlers that do high flying, acrobatic, really cool stuff. Well, how do you stand out? You do an 80s match, and, you know, you don't do any of that kind of stuff. And El Fantasma is typically a high flyer, so he can adapt and do whatever in that ring. And I learned a lot just being in there with him, just about pacing and how to put on a good match. And that one definitely is up there. You know, I got to have a couple matches with guys that I trained with that were really important to me because I even though I'm in my 40s and these guys are in their 20s, late 20s, early 20s, I look up to them because I get to train with them, and they're ahead of me. And that's the one thing I love about wrestling is, like, it doesn't matter what your age is. Like, someone might be ahead of you that's half your age. And I like that. I can learn from somebody, and I'm not too ego-driven to be like, well, if that guy's younger than me, what am I going to learn from them? So, like, guys like I had matched with Cody Chun and Guillermo Rosas. Both of those guys are great dudes, and that was cool. I had a match with Nick Wayne, and obviously we all know, like, he's just taking over the world,
son of
Buddy Wayne. Dude, I mean, he is a unique talent. He turns 18 in a few months, and he's already got, like, the experience and knowledge of someone that's probably in their 30s. Like, and also maturity. The guy is just an incredible kid. And I feel bad even calling him a kid because, yeah, he's a kid in age, but he's more mature than most of us in the wrestling world. And we had a match a few months ago in Everett, and, you know, it was – He agreed. Like, we both just had a really fun time. It was a great dynamic of my style and his style, and it wasn't anything – like, I'm not able to keep up with him with high-flying stuff. So our match was more about creating a story and moments, and, you know, it was one of those ones that I'm very proud of. So, like, I would throw that one in there. trying to think of what other one. There was a match I had with Ethan Page, who's now in AEW. And that match was special just because at that point I was still very insecure about my abilities. And I'm just trying to, like, you know, I knew there was a lot of eyes on me because of what I do for the radio. I knew I was getting opportunities in wrestling because of what I do for the radio. I'm not blind to that, but that's show business. Like, you know, if you have a chance to help, if this person can help sell you tickets, you're crazy not to use them. And if I'm helping people sell tickets, that's awesome. But then I put this pressure on, like, well, now all eyes are on me. I don't want to be terrible. I know I'm never going to be, like, the best in town, but I don't want people to go in and be like, yeah, it's obvious that they're only using him because he's on the radio. He's awful in the ring, but I get what, you know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be that guy. I was just plugging away, just trying to prove that I'm decent enough in the ring. And then Without a Cause Wrestling, which was a promotion in Everett at the time, they were like, we have Ethan Page, and we think that you and him would be perfect just because of his character and your character and all this stuff. And I didn't think I deserved that opportunity, but I'm not crazy enough to turn down that opportunity. Like, you know, I always say, like, don't give you an opportunity. Don't say no because you don't deserve it. Say yes and prove that you earned it then. And that's what I kind of wanted to do. And I spent a lot of time working to get ready for that match. And the match went well. And, I mean, he had a good time and I had a good time. The crowd loved it. So that was fun. And then I think, though, one of the ones I have to throw up there, and it's funny to say one of my favorite matches lasted under 2 minutes, was the match against Jake Hager at All Elite Wrestling. Like, getting the opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
I never... Yeah, you know, like, I mean, I joke about this, but I mean, there's, like, a picture of me in the ring and, like, my arms up, and there's an entire crowd. It's, you know, several thousand people in Portland, Oregon at the arena there for All Elite Wrestling for AEW Dark. And my first thought is, how in the hell did I get here? Like, I do not belong here. I should have never been in that ring. Like, I'm a man who started training at 40 years old, wanted to do it on the local level, have fun, you know, have a chance to live a dream that I never thought I'd have. And now I'm in the ring for one of the biggest promotions, the second biggest. I mean, I don't even think there's an argument there. I mean, behind the WWE, they're the most well-known promotion. And I'm in the ring with a former WWE champ, a guy that's, you know, been around forever in Jake Hager. Hell, he's not only a great wrestler, but also a great MMA fighter. And I'm in the ring, and the crowd, like, they because I do wrestle in Portland, so they knew who I was, so they reacted really well when I got introduced. And I'm having this match. And, yeah, it's a squash match, and I'm there just to enhance him. And he was really appreciative. After the match, he said, he's like, hey, thank you. You made me look like $1 million. And he was really, like, happy. And everyone was complimentary. We created a fun moment with me putting on his hat, because that's his whole gimmick. It's like he's got this purple bucket hat. And I put it on, and then he just murdered me. And that's how the match ended. And it was like, it wasn't anything. I didn't go into it trying to prove that I could hold my own with the guy. And I went into it fully. Like, I'm here to enhance you. Like, that's my job. And I'm going to do it as best as I can. And he was happy. I was happy. The crowd was into it. Everyone behind the scenes back there were very complimentary, and they appreciated what happened in there. And it's just one of those moments where, like, again, like, I never thought it would happen. And the funny part was, like, I was so nervous about watching it back, because I was like, oh man, Taz is going to probably goof on me. Or, like, you know, like all of us wrestlers, I think at some point you have, like, body image issues. You're like, when I knew this was going to happen, I really busted my tail to get in the best shape of my life. So I was like, I want to make sure I look good, or as good as I can look, and not look like some kind of schlub that they just brought in. And so, like, that was important to me as well. And I'm watching it back, and I'm, like, so nervous. And, like, the first thing he says is, like, he's like, oh, this guy reminds me of, I don't know, like, some dude that he worked with. He's like, but a jacked version of him. And I'm like, oh, I'm good. Taz didn't insult me. He said I looked jacked at the time. This is the best moment of my life. Like, you know, Taz growing up, you know, I'm a Brooklyn kid. He's a Brooklyn guy, so I always looked up to him as well. So to get complimented by Taz during the match and not look terrible in the ring, and everything went well. Like, they even said they'd love to have me back. Like, it was great, man. Like, again, my all-time favorite match lasted probably a minute and 30 seconds.
Wow, yes. That was very – what a blessing. And then, man, I got some notes just from what we've been talking about. Little off script,
yeah,
to my original questions, man.
Sure,
you're a humble,
sure,
guy, and you know, and that steel in the hat was special, you know, so that was cool.
Yeah.
And then back to the El Fantasmo situation. My goodness, that was a believable match. On top of, I rate that match, it's definitely a 4-star, probably a 4.5-star match. It's hard for me to,
wow,
rate a 5-star match because,
yeah,
just because. It had everything,
yeah,
a match needed. it was believable on the fact of Phantasmo's cutting promos. He's going to end your career. And he actually, of course, it wasn't a shoot, but Aaron Bolo, one of the top wrestlers in the Northwest, had his career injured in a match against Phantasmo. And when he's out there saying he's going to end your career, that made it believable.
Wow, yeah. Dude, Aaron Bolo is a guy I've heard so many great things. I never got to see live, and I've always heard that he was like the guy, had he not been injured, would have been probably to this day a dude that we talk about on television. I wish I could have seen him or share a locker room and just and witness what he – everyone I've ever heard talk about him just raves about that guy.
Yes, you know, I was honored to have him on a few weeks back. It was a great interview. Mm-hmm. And then still on that match with El Phantasmo, you had in your corner one of the top 10 wrestlers in the Northwest in the past decade or more, Ethan
yep.
HD
yeah.
in your corner. Tell us a little bit about
yes.
working with him.
We could go a whole hour about how much I love that guy. I'm not even kidding. Like, Ethan is one, I would say, in like, if I put together a list of the people who have had the most impact on my wrestling journey, there's Ethan HD and then everybody else. Like, there's nobody higher. Like, even like I go back to that Ethan Page match, I was so nervous. Ethan took time out of his day and we met up at a ring and we worked on things that I knew Ethan Page did in his matches. I wanted to make sure I can take and do. And Ethan spent the time to help me with that. He was the guy that helped me. So like that match, like you said, like there's moments in that match where you said the believable parts in that match with what El Phantasmo said, that relationship with me and Ethan HD was also a legit true thing. Like there was history with us. Nobody helped me more in this wrestling journey than Ethan HD. And I'm not even like, that's not an exaggeration. That's the God's honest truth. So like to be able to team with him, sometimes we had two tag matches together at Defy. To have those matches with Ethan were amazing. And I had a match with him last year in Seattle as well. And like having that match with him was also amazing. Like I forgot to mention that as one of my memorable matches, but yeah, man. And obviously he's just a great dude just to like talk to in the locker room. I vent to him at times when I'm like, I'm confused by certain things or I'm not happy about certain things. Like I really do look up to that guy as just a person I can like talk to about the wrestling stuff and get like a good answer. And he's very thoughtful. And also he's become a great friend, like outside of just the wrestling stuff. Like I'm really appreciative of having him as a friend. So there's that moment in that match with El Phantasmo at the end when the match ends and you know, the ref hits the three count, the crowd erupts, which was really cool. But my favorite moment wasn't the crowd reaction, although I love that. It was the moment he just slid into the ring and just bear hugged me. And I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was something to the extent of, he's like, today you proved that you belong and Defy, you know, as a wrestler. He's like, you held your own with one of the best and put on a great performance with one of the best. And that meant a lot to me. So I'm glad you brought up Ethan because he's one of my favorites. And he's also one of my favorites to watch. I just watched him last night have a match. And it was against Kingpin Johnny Flynn, who hadn't wrestled in a few years. And the two of them put on like a 25-minute match that had me jumping like a wrestling fan again. Like I wasn't watching a wrestler as a wrestler and like, oh, that's cool what he's doing. I was watching him as a fan. And you know how that is. When you have those moments where you forget that you're even doing the wrestling thing and you're just watching a match as a fan, oh, it's the best.
Yes, for sure. You know, and I got a couple Ethan HD stories. I'm a co-host of Turnbuckle Turmoil with the one and only Sign Guy. Sign Guy says that
yeah.
one of the best matches he ever seen was Ethan HD versus Dash Venture in NGW. So that meant
Ooh.
A lot to me. You know, and
That's
then
awesome.
One time we're in, where was it? Paulsville at SGW, and we're in the locker room, and it's Ethan HD, and I'm standing next to Dave Havoc Hollenbeck, who I got into wrestling, and man, he's probably one of the toughest guys in the Northwest and in mixed martial arts. But Ethan HD mm-hmm. says to me in front of Havoc, he goes, I think Coach is the toughest guy in the Northwest. And it just sort of blew my mind because I was like, I don't think of myself as that, you know? And I was like, huh?
Yeah.
What? Why do you say that? He goes, well, you beat Mike. He goes, well, you beat Mike Santiago. I don't know anybody who can beat him. Hey, because I'm not sure
That's
if you
awesome.
You knew or the remind the fans that me and Mike Santiago had a shoot MMA match, and I beat him in the third round knockout.
Oh, nice.
Yes, he is one of the toughest, you know. And when he said that, I was like, yeah, he's a great wrestler too, you know, and a tough guy, like he was saying. But when he said that, that was his reason why. I was like, well, okay.
Yeah.
I guess in my opinion, I don't want to be the best. If I'm one of the best or up there, I'm fine. Okay. And then
my philosophy is just, I never want to, when I stopped trying to be as good as other people, like, you know, when you kind of, I was like, I just want to be the best version of me. And once I started having that mindset in wrestling, it became a lot more fun. Like, I'm never going to be the best, but if I could be better than I was yesterday, then I'm succeeding.
Yes, for sure. And then back to starting out in your 40s, I started out in my 30s. Because when I was 18 years old, I called up Sandy Barr in Portland, Oregon for big time wrestling.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I want to try out. He blew my mind. He had one question for me. He said, did you wrestle in college? I said, nope. Click. I was like, what the hell?
Wow.
I could go to New York or I can go to Georgia. But I'm like, I'm 18, just out of high school. I grew up poor. I don't have any money. I'm not going to do that. I'm like, well, I guess I'll just give up on my dream. Then I'm 30 years old at a match for DeBossi had a show at the Puyallup Armory here in Puyallup where I live. Playboy Buddy Rose had a fan challenge. I stood up. I said, I'll do it. Out comes Big Red Wrecking Crew, 6'5", 370 pounds. I'm like, oh, shit. But that's how I got in. So I know what you mean about training late. Goodness.
Oh, yeah. We shouldn't be doing it as late in our lives as we do. But, there's nothing more fun. Those stories are so great. That's amazing.
And then, hey, I know your time is money, and then you agreed to an hour. How much more time do you have?
I got about 10 more minutes, if that's cool.
Okay, that's cool. Yes. Okay, then so what do you got coming up?
I'm actually heading off to Vancouver this Saturday. I'm going to be wrestling over at All Star Wrestling for their Pacific Cup tournament. So this is going to be my first time wrestling in British Columbia. Other than I did like a student showcase for Lionsgate Dojo a few years ago before the pandemic. But this will be the first time where it's like a paying audience. So I'm super excited about that. That was definitely on my list of things I'd like to accomplish before I call it a day in wrestling is to wrestle in Canada. So I'm hoping that this will be the first of other opportunities in Vancouver because there's so many great promotions that are happening right there. And the fact that I get to start my first wrestling match in Vancouver is with All-Star Wrestling, which is such a historic promotion. I'm very excited about that.
Awesome. And how do people get a hold of you?
Just on all the social medias. I mean, if you just type in I'm Steve Miggs, the letter I and the letter M, and then Steve Miggs, that's how I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat. Like, because of my job with radio, you know, we have to be on top of all the social media. Sometimes, dude, like, I'll be honest, like, there are days where I'm like, I just don't want to have social media. I don't want to have any way to, because there's just so much drama and there's so much,
goodness.
I always say, and I saw even Dax Harwood posted today, like, sometimes you've got to remind yourself that Twitter or social media is not real. And I witnessed it a lot, especially recently, where it's just like, you can't believe everything that's said on the internet. Some things might be true. Other things might be complete and utter false. And other things, there might be shades of truth, but it's spun in a way that's not true, and it's just infuriating. Depending on the day, I either love or despise social media. I love the fact that I can communicate with people that are listeners or fans of wrestling or hell, even like, you know, I've built friendships with other wrestlers through social media because they're from other states and like you just kind of keep in touch and enjoy each other's work. I love that part. I love the socialness of social media, but I don't love the drama that happens because sometimes I think, and I truly believe it's like, I don't think everybody's bad on social media, but because of text that has no tone and there's no emotion behind it.
Yeah.
Sometimes things get misunderstood and people then it becomes a war of who can get the last word and people are saying mean things and it escalates. You know what I mean? It escalates to the point where it's like, dude,
yes.
What is going on? If we just pick up a phone and talk, I bet maybe we might argue, but Right, but by the end of the conversation, we might actually see eye to eye and be like, oh, because, like, sometimes you just got to talk to somebody and see what they sound like and see their face. And, you know, social media takes that part away from communication. And that, to me, is like 90% of the communication is the emotion and the eye contact or the tone of voice. The other 10% is what's being said. And we lose that.
Yes. You know, people have to remind themselves of the internet and the social media can be a beautiful thing, but also that it's impossible for haters to like anything, you know. And then I have that example from just yesterday. I had a misunderstanding at my work, and I thought things might have went the wrong direction, but it was nice when the big boss messaged me back. I honestly felt it didn't seem like he was screaming in the message. Like you said, you know, it's hard to interpret that, but I got the feeling it wasn't. He wasn't screaming. That made me feel good, you know. Okay.
There've been times where, like, I'm going back and forth. I'm like, hey, give me your number. Let's just talk. And then we talk. And I'm like, we could have saved 2 hours of our time.
Yeah. Who are some of your favorite people to work?
Ethan HD. I love Cody Chun. He's really fun. Nick Wayne. Nick Wayne's a brilliant mind, and it's fun to kind of get a peek inside of that mind because. Each time I work in the ring with him in training, he has new tools in his tool belt because he's, like, wrestling the biggest names in the independent scene right now. So that's a lot of fun. I like working with this guy. He's a part of a tag team called The Academy, Tom Allman. And he's a big guy. He's kind of like the muscle of the team. And he's just – he's got a brilliant creative mind. His stuff, when he does it to you, it – like, if you watch his stuff, it looks like he's murdering people, but he's taking care of people in a great way. He's truly one of the unsung talents, I think, in the Pacific Northwest. And I wish more eyes would get on him because he's really, really good. His tag team partner, Nick Radford, I recently was training with him and working with him. Those guys are great. A lot of the guys I train with, I really enjoy. Austin Oso is another guy coming up. Drake Kwan, Randy Hawkins, Carl Randers, he goes by, sorry. He's phenomenal in the ring as well. I really enjoy Invictus Cash is another one. He went by King Cash at Defy for a while, and he's doing a lot of stuff on the indies, from doing enhancement talent with AEW, doing stuff with WWE, to doing stuff with Championship Hollywood, Championship Wrestling in Hollywood. He, in my opinion, is a guy that I think you're printing money if you put him in a promotion. His name's Invictus Cash. He looks great. He's a true grappler style wrestler. He has very creative stuff that he does in the ring. He could go any style. And then you work with him. Every time I finish training with him and working with him, I have a new tool in my toolbox. And that's my favorite thing. It's like, how can I learn working with somebody? Another great guy to work with is from Canada, Daniel McCabe. He's a very technical. I'm not a grappler style wrestler, but I love working with guys that are, because I learn new things and new tricks. That way, when I do get involved in a grappler situation, I remember when we did this. You know what I mean? Like, you're always learning in the ring. And I feel like the best way to learn is just by doing it and see what happens.
For sure. And then one of our favorite segments on the show is called Favorites. And I'm sure Sign Guy and the rest of the fans would like to know what your favorite coffee to drink is.
Favorite coffee is Bigfoot Java, the coffee stand that's around here. It's a Northwest brand, and that honestly is it's actually a bad addiction for my wife and I. We sometimes go there twice a day, and I'm basic. I just get an Americano with like sugar-free vanilla and oat milk. We're both, my wife and I are vegan, so everything is dairy-free with what we eat and drink, and I just love their coffee there. I love also, dude, since sometimes it's also because of the baristas. You know, you have certain people that you see in there, just you create a relationship with the person that's making your coffee. And I always feel like we've made it when we get to a stand, and after a while, they just know our order. Like, I go up there and I don't even have to tell them what I'm having. They're just like, oh, yeah, getting that Americano, right? And so it's a basic drink, but I just like the taste of it.
Okay, right on. And then I was a local roadie for like 10 years, and I've seen over 700 shows. What I mean by that, of course, some shows have 5 bands, so I count each band as a different show. But you probably have seen more shows than I have, being in the industry your whole life, or, you know, your career. What's your favorite concert you've seen?
Oh, wow. I saw Faith No More at the Moore Theater, like late 90s. And it was pure chaos on stage. It was right around the time that they were about to break up. And you can tell that they did not like each other, but that negative energy sometimes works. And for them, they played their hearts out. And then I saw them when they reunited, and they were just as great. So, like, Faith No More is one of my favorite bands. One of the Pearl Jam shows at the T-Mobile Park when they did those home shows a couple of years ago. It was special. And I went with my buddy Craig Proper. I don't know if you know him. He's also buddies with, like, Farmer and Buddy Wayne and Wrestle.
Craig's
one of my homies.
Yes.
Oh, you did? Okay. Craig's my man. He's one of my close buddies. And him and I went. He's a bigger Pearl Jam fan than me. So him and I went to the Pearl Jam show, and I think at one point we were, like, just, like, hugging each other. Like, it was, you know, it's, like, a powerful band, and if you love them, it gets emotional at times because they're just such a great band. So I put those as, like, some of my favorites. There's a band called The Glorious Sons. My wife and I saw them in Vancouver, and we've seen them a bunch of times. But the one time we saw them in Vancouver, they were just – the crowd was crazy. It was at the Commodore Ballroom, and they're a great band. If anyone likes just straight up great rock and roll with, like, a little bit of a modern vibe to it, but also, like, a nice nod to the 70s, they're called The Glorious Sons, and they're a phenomenal band.
Right on. Okay. And then what's your favorite sports teams?
Love the Seattle Kraken. Very fired up right now that they're going to be going into the playoffs. Also love the New Jersey Devils. Grew up being a big Devils fan. And so two of my two favorite hockey teams are both looking really good going into the playoffs, which is kind of crazy because for the longest time, the Devils have sucked. And, of course, I'm still a fan of theirs. And now all of a sudden they're considered one of the better teams in the league. And the Kraken, what an amazing turnaround from season one to season two. So for hockey, it's those two teams. You know, I've been living in Seattle since 97, so I've really fallen in love with the local teams here. So, man, I just want to see the Mariners win a World Series. I want nothing more than to see the Mariners win a World Series, or at least do well in the playoffs, you know. Last year was amazing, and it was such a great, hopefully, start to what is going to be an incredible franchise. Obviously, I haven't started super hot yet, but they're getting better. And I love Julio Rodriguez, obviously. I love the fact that he is committed to being a Mariner for a long time. Like that article he wrote, to signing that contract. There's something cool about when a player that you know could be a massive superstar if they went to New York or Boston, and they say, no, Seattle's my home. I love the fans. I love the team, and I want to be a star here. So I love that. And the Seahawks, of course, man. I'm a massive Seahawks fan. And last year might have been one of my favorite years to watch just because so little was expected. And I love the Geno Smith story. And I just look forward to this season, and I hope that they continue and pick up where they left off, but are only better because, man, they've made some good pickups for the defense, and hopefully the draft goes well. Man, this could be a really fun team to watch. I'm a big Pete Carroll fan, and I love the energy of the team and the fan base. So, yeah, man, those are my favorite teams.
Okay, and then I know we're on, like, the last minute here, and I sure would like to interview you for a promo in my NGW Green Room someday, but my last two questions I'd like to get in, if we could, is suggestions for people and schools you suggest.
For wrestling, right?
Suggestions for wrestling or life is fine.
Okay. I train at the Buddy Wayne Academy. I unfortunately never met Buddy. I started training there after he passed. But it's special to be in that garage because the spirit of Buddy is definitely in there. Like, you can tell, like, all the guys that trained with him, they instill a lot of the stuff. And, you know, and his wife, Sean, is always there. And so, you know, obviously she's watching to make sure we're learning the way that her husband trained everybody when he was still with us. So they take that very serious. And, you know, you go through and you train the way that Buddy would have wanted you to. And, you know, that's always going to be one of life's – I wish I could have met him, and I wish I could know how he thinks that I'm doing in the ring. You know what I mean? Because, like, I take a lot of pride in representing – I hope I represent that school well because I've learned so much and become a better wrestler. I didn't start training there. I've only been training there for 2 years. But I've grown so much in those 2 years, and I know other people would attest to that because they said, like, there's a massive difference in how I wrestle. So those are that's where I go. Obviously, that's the place I would recommend people. going to. But there's other good training. Oregon Pro Wrestling. I've seen some great wrestlers come out of there. It's run by the guys Ricky and Eddie from the Midnight Heat, and they're killing it on the independent scene, and they're great wrestlers, and they have great minds for wrestling, and they're training out some incredible students. Dragonplex is in Everett, and they have some great students as well. I know right now they're on a hiatus, and hopefully they come back stronger, which is SOS Pro Wrestling Academy. Ethan, I think he's training the advanced classes there. And I hope they come back, and you know, they've dealt with some stuff right now that's not fun, but I feel like they'll come back stronger, because sometimes you got to get rid of some people that are just not good people, and the good people are still there. So guys like Pitfall Jones and Ethan HD are incredible human beings, and they're great teachers. So one day if they come back, I would say if you're in the South End, that's a good place to learn from as well. Those are the ones I can think of offhand. I know there's Lionsgate in Vancouver, but I don't know if anyone's in Vancouver, British Columbia that's listening. That's a place to definitely go. They're churning out incredible wrestlers, and they've got great instructors as well. So it's crazy, dude. I feel like the Pacific Northwest has a lot of really good places to learn, and you're starting to see it with a lot of the young talent. I mean, there's some guys that I think are going to take over the wrestling world in a few years, and not just here locally, but on a national level.
Right on. Okay, Steve. Yes, man, I really appreciate you for your time and for this interview. It's an honor. I wish you all the luck in the world for your BJ and Migs show, Bruiser Brody, your wrestling career, your family, everything. Thank you so much. Is there anything else you'd like to plug or promote?
I don't. I just want to thank you, Mike. I've always I know we've never really met, but we've always communicated on social media, and I've always like seen what you've done before in this town, and you're a true gem of the Pacific Northwest in wrestling, a great. And it meant a lot that you invited me onto the show, and I'm flattered and honored, dude. I truly mean that. It was great to cut it up with you for an hour, and I look forward to one day meeting you, man.
Yes, you know, and I think I actually did meet you at the Great America Casino when you guys had a promotion down there. I at least got to shake your hand, but of course you're
yes.
really busy that day. Okay,
it
yes.
was so brief, but yes, absolutely. Yeah, but I'd love to meet you when we're not just on like a high-buy kind of situation then. Yeah.
Exactly. All right, man. Thank
yeah.
you so much, Steve. I appreciate it.
Thank you, man. I truly appreciate it. I had a blast talking to you.
All right. Hope to have you on Turnbuckle back again.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks a lot, man. Take care.
See ya. All right. Bye. All right. There he is, Steve Migs, the one and only. My goodness. He's done so much in the Northwest. It was really an honor to have him on. Yes, you know, Mariners will be playing again today. Jared Kelnick, man, he's looking like an all-star out there. Home runs in four games in a row. And, man, his swing looks beautiful from just being a 100 hitter his whole career up until now. And, man, he's been hitting some bombs. Another one to center field last night. The game before, he hit it one to center field, 482 feet to the upper deck. So that was impressive also. And also still, the Rainiers are 6-6. The Arkansas Travelers are 6-1 now. The Everett Aqua Sox are only 1-5. But I'm hoping they can turn it around soon. And, yes, the Kraken, my goodness, what a story they have where in their – second year, they were they had the biggest turnaround of any team in hockey. So we're looking forward to that, too. And also, you got the Seattle Dragons tomorrow in St. Louis against the Battlehawks. And we lost last time we played them, so we're hoping the Seattle Sea Dragons can turn it around tomorrow. All right, everybody, you guys can check me out at Coach Mike Jones, the coach with the most. Coach Mike Jones on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. Don't forget to check out the Real School Army and the NGW Green Room for interviews from celebrities all over the world. And if you need any work done in the Northwest here, we have A-plus, Payless, Handyman Services, no job too big or small. And also, they are 10% cheaper than any written estimate and 15% cheaper for militaries and seniors. And they are licensed, bonded, and insured general contractors, so they can do build a house from ground up. And also, I want to say, coming up, man, I'm just so happy about the schedule I've had lately. I had like I said, I had Bolo on the other week, Lone Star last week, Migs today. I have the Perfect 10 Baby Doll next week on the 22nd. And on the 29th, I have Hellbound's Petrov. And then on May 6th, I have Cubal Carmichael from the East Coast there. I'm a big fan of all those guys. I want to thank you guys all for your love, support, the hope you guys give me, the feedback, and just everything. We appreciate you guys so much. Thanks so much. God bless you, and have a great weekend.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, undiagnosed. You feeling tired, life inspired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.